CJSF is looking for new volunteers to come in and make radio. No experience is necessary. You can learn to DJ, edit sound, produce news, make posters, and host your own show. Come out to a weekly station orientation to get involved. Orientation times can be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Ancestors' village was not the global village of the 21st century, so writes Orin J. Sofer in his introduction to his book, Your Heart Was Made for This. We are living in infinite complexities and pressures. They did not have to contend with a bombardment of reportings of mass shootings, wars, and other ecological and social catastrophes. Nor were they being doggedly chased by social media algorithms trying to convince them to consume stuff and goods that would soon be obsolete. In today's climate of overwhelm, the clear questions that arise are, how do we find the strength and clarity necessary to engage skillfully with these immense problems of our time? And what are the inner resources available to us? In our deep desire to be of help, how can qualities such as integrity, concentration, gratitude, and generosity possibly lead us to become more effective for positive activism in the world? To guide us in these transformative practices of resilience is our guest today, Orin J. Sofer. Orin J. Sofer teaches meditation, mindfulness, and nonviolent communication in both secular and Buddhist contexts. He received his degree in comparative religion from Columbia University and is a certified trainer of nonviolent communication, as well as a somatic experiencing practitioner for the healing of trauma. He serves as a member of the Spirit Rock Meditation Center Teachers Council in Northern California. Orin J. Sofer is the author of Say What You Mean, A Mindful Approach to Nonviolent Communication, and Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplative Practice for Meeting a World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. Join us for the next hour as we explore responding more effectively in a time of great social, environmental, and spiritual upheaval with our guest, Orin J. Sofer. I'm speaking with Orin from his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Orin, welcome.
Hi, Justine. Thanks so much for having me here.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. In the beginning, in my introduction, I mentioned that we are living in very different time from our ancestors. I would love for you to make some comment on that and how you see how life has truly, truly changed in these times.
Well, since I wasn't alive then.
Of course not.
Everything I know is, you know, from some of our imagination and things like evolutionary biology, but it's clear from the way our nervous systems are designed that on a purely biological level, our environment is at odds with what we come into this world expecting. And I think that that places us in a certain position of tension and real challenge, contending with the reality of our lives. And what I think something very deep and ancient in us longs for in terms of a sense of belonging, community, enough downtime to recover and process what's unfolding, along with a shared sense of meaning and purpose. It's really easy, I think, to romanticize the past, and I'm not advocating for that. Certainly, there's been a tremendous amount of real progress that we have made, not the myth of progress, but actual progress in terms of things like health and medicine and moral evolution. But at the same time, this challenge of the world that we have created and how it is at odds with what's actually in our best interest, both physiologically, as well as I think spiritually and emotionally, is really, I think, one of the key challenges for us to contend with today if we are to live meaningful lives and be a part of making a better future. We need to find a way to exist within the context of our times that is not overwhelming us and continually beating us down or draining us. And so this is one of the aims of my new book, is to look that problem head on and say, how do we draw on what we were made for, and the resources we do have inside, in order to leverage any influence we have in our lives, whether it's in our family, our workplace, our community, or more broadly, to be a force for good and a force for change.
In your book, which I just loved because you had such a wonderful combination of the inner and the outer, it is your experience, I guess I would say, that the inner awareness reflects the outer, and it makes it possible to even be able to act on the outer. So I would love for you to say something about the connection between the inner and the outer.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Justine. I agree with what you're saying. I think it's true the inner reflects and shapes the outer. And I also think it's true in the other way, that the outer shapes the inner, and they're not separate in the way that we can so easily believe that our inner life is separate from the outer world. Those distinctions, when we really look closely in any way, whether it's through contemplation, meditation, or science, those distinctions start to dissolve because they're artificial. They're created by the mind. So, you know, I've spent a couple decades or more really delving deeply into meditation practice. It's what really inspired me as a vehicle for change, both personally and collectively. I think you might know from reading the book, I'm a new parent, and that's shifted my priorities in many real ways. And so one of the aims of the book is to grapple with the very question you just posed of how can our inner life be a force for change in the world. And I see the relationship between these two as intertwined. And on the one hand, you know, if we focus solely on the inner life, there's a certain risk there that we might fail to respond to the suffering in the world. But at the same time, if we focus only on the external, on social change, without also healing and strengthening our hearts, first and foremost, we risk burning out and then not being of any use to ourselves or anyone. But also, and equally importantly, we run the risk of actually unconsciously recreating some of the ills and the dynamics that we're seeking to address. We can reenact unconsciously the dynamics of control, domination, oppression, if we're not simultaneously working on transforming our own consciousness in the way that we work for social change. So I think one of the great gifts, or I might say two of the great gifts that contemplative practice offers to those of us who are committed to building a better world, one is discovering and sustaining a renewable source of energy inside. And two is aligning means with ends so that we are actively living into the world we want to see as we're working for it. That we are coming from a place that more and more embodies the kind of future we want to see. And this is the vision of principled nonviolence. I mean, this is what people like Gandhi and King, why they were such beacons of hope, I think, in human history is because they were able to demonstrate that you can embody and live the values that you're wanting to create, even in the midst of a world that is devoid of them in some ways.
You mentioned renewable sources of energy inside. Mm-hmm. Well, let's unpack that one, please. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear, Oren, what you have to say about that is renewable inside.
Well, I think the first thing to acknowledge and note here, and I talk about this, I have a chapter on energy because it's such a central faculty in our lives, is that to a large degree, many of us internally have been infected with the dominant paradigm of fossil fuel energy and this kind of extractive model of the modern society in the West and the global North, of get as much as possible, as fast as possible. And so we see this on an individual level manifest as things like striving, using willpower to push through, using caffeine to override our limits, right? So this is a reflection of the unconscious and in some ways conscious relationship with energy in our society today. So just as we need to make a shift to renewable sources of energy as a society and collectively, I think it's important to also look internally to where do we source our energy from? How do we use our energy? Are we doing it in a way that's effective? And are we connected to a more sustainable, renewable source of energy? So what is that? What two of the key resources we have internally, a kind of wellspring of renewable energy. One is aspiration. And aspiration is our sense of vision of what's possible for ourselves and others. This can galvanize an entire population to mobilize when we feel inspired by a vision. So do we have a vision? Do we have an aspiration for ourselves personally as well as collectively? This is one source of energy. And then a second key related source of energy is the energy of willingness, the energy of choice rather than obligation. And this is a tricky one because many of us have been educated to believe that there are things you just have to do. I have to do this. I don't have a choice. I just have to do this. And this is how domination systems work, is that they rob us of our sense of agency and free will by tricking us into thinking that we have to obey external authority, and then it becomes internalized. We force ourselves to do things that are actually not in our best interest or the best interest of the planet or the living systems of the earth. So one of the ways to contend with this, which draws on the skills of nonviolent communication that Marshall Rosenberg made popular and founded, is to question this sense of, do I have to, or am I choosing to? And recognizing that even the things we tell ourselves we have to do, in many cases, we are choosing to do them to meet certain needs.
I want to go more deeply into this and especially into aspiration in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Oren J. Silver, and he is the author of Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplative Practices for Meeting the World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with Oren J. Soffer, and he's a meditation teacher and a nonviolent communication practitioner. And we were talking about just before the break about aspiration. And I want to go deeper into aspiration because it was one of the ones that just really popped for me. I just want to explain to our listeners that you go through qualities in your book, and there are 26 of them, and you go into depth in each one and have practices associated with them. And so aspiration, if we could go into that a little more deeply, because what I got from that when I read that and some of the words that popped out for me was we have the ability to steer our life, but rather than control our life. And there's that difference to control. We want to do that, but you suggest that there's a softer, easier way to go forward that's maybe even more effective. Can you comment on that?
Sure. So aspiration is distinct from this quality of contraction that comes with something like expectation. Expectation is a sense of what should be. And then that leads us into these kind of arguments with reality or the sense of struggle with what is. Aspiration is a sense of what could be, which opens us to what's possible. So aspiration is a stirring of the heart that yearns for or trusts that there is something better, something deeper, something more fulfilling, just or good for us, for our family, for our community in life. And that connects us with what's possible. If we don't have an aspiration, we don't try. We don't bring forth the energy required for transformation personally or collectively. And to really be connected with and fueled by aspiration, I think we have to challenge ourselves and really question what's most important to me in my life. What is it that I really value and what do I want to navigate towards? So for example, I mentioned earlier that I'm a new parent. We have a blessed to have a healthy 13-month-old baby. And, you know, to me, to articulate my aspiration as a parent, that I want to bring a quality of deep care, attention, and respect to every interaction. This serves as a guide. This helps me when I feel grumpy or frustrated or irritated or impatient to recollect my deep value and my orientation towards how I want to parent. Or on a more collective level, to be clear about our values, that I want to stand against violence, oppression, and injustice, even when doing so may threaten my own comfort or safety. This capacity to articulate what is important to us and where we want to head towards becomes a resource as we engage and encounter different situations in our lives.
You mentioned like being a parent, and you have these aspirations of how you'd like to be. And this baby comes in with his own personality, his own needs, and you may have a direction or that you'd like to steer it towards, but this kid is going to have his own needs, and that's going to necessarily provide its own challenge toward your need to adjust.
Well, just to clarify, I misspoke there. It's not that my aspiration is for how I want him to be. The aspiration is how I want to be, how I wish to relate to him. I'm not trying to control him or mold him into something. It's more how I want to relate. In terms of him, my aspiration is to support him to discover and be whoever he wants to be. Yeah.
Yeah, very, very good. And, you know, when we're having a moment, I guess it's when we're stepping into the possibilities that we'd like in our lives. You really talk about, I'm thinking of a quote from a poem by Antonio Machado, which has to do with stepping into the road. We make our own road with each step we take. Mm-hmm. And somehow I feel like that aspiration is also a matter of mm-hmm. walking, of making the step by step mm-hmm. and making the road. Is that, am I getting some quality there?
Yeah, absolutely. I am familiar with maybe a different related quote, which is from Paulo Freire, who said, "We make the road by walking." And that's very much connected to the sense of aspiration. And also what we were talking about before of how a contemplative practice allows us to align means with ends that are, even though our vision of what we might seem far away or impossible, that every step brings us closer. And just in moving towards it one step at a time, we are paving the way. Yeah.
One of the aspirations or one of the qualities that you talk about in the book is a big one. It's mindfulness. And you know, you point out right away, and I really appreciated this, that mindfulness has become commodified these days in by a whole multi-billion-dollar wellness industry. And so help us understand the quality of mindfulness that goes beyond, okay, I'm going to fix myself, or I'm going to cure my depression or my stress, or I'm going to be more productive if I do my mindfulness practice, you know, and all of that. So help us to understand maybe a deeper practice of mindfulness that helps us be more effective in the world.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's so sad to me because the things that the wellness industry suggests and uses to sell mindfulness are very worthy goals, you know, to feel more calm, to be resilient, to focus better and be more effective. All of those are, you know, things that mindfulness can support. But the challenge is twofold here in the way it's presented and often offered. And one is that it suggests that the way to strengthen those things is by kind of trying to make ourselves different, that, you know, I'm going to try to make myself be this way, which actually puts us in a position of conflict and tension with reality. And that, so to feel, say, calm or feel better, I need to experience calm and move away from the difficulties I'm experiencing, when actually the opposite is true, is that to feel more at ease, to be more resilient, to experience more calm and focus, the way to that true mindfulness practice invites us into is to open to all of life, to experience all of the parts of who we are, and to find a way of being, understanding, and relating to those parts that isn't consumed by them, thrown off by them, or crushed by them. So the sort of narrative of the wellness industry is the sense of do this and feel better. And the danger there is that we have to encounter our challenges and our pain in order to heal and overcome them. It's like James Baldwin said, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. So mindfulness brings us face to face with the truth of our experience individually on a collective level. It brings us face to face with the challenges that we're experiencing on the planet today so that we can contend with them in a different way.
So I know in your own life, you give the example of your own being mindful of the privilege that you have as a straight white male in mm-hmm. this particular culture. Mm-hmm. So if you could talk about how, because mindfulness is not like everything's going to be easy and lovely, and it can be difficult. It can you're talking about opening yourself up to a wider view of life in your own particular life. So I'd love for you to say something about what you've learned there.
Sure, absolutely, Justine. I think the key thing here is to recognize that there's these different facets of what mindfulness can do for us. So mindfulness does enrich our life. It does help us be more present and available for the beautiful moments. And in order to do that, like in order to be available and connected and intimate with life, we have to open to everything, to look at everything, to experience all that's there. And so part of that is, you know, seeing the shadow inside. And so part of my own practice has been to look very carefully at the way my personality, my way of understanding myself and others has been shaped by the forces of our society, and to see the areas that I might be missing things or enacting some kind of privilege. So, for example, I tell the story in the chapter on mindfulness of kind of in a what I had hoped would be a very sort of friendly and innocent way, placing my hand on a woman's shoulder who was sitting next to me at an event and saying and striking up a conversation. And I later learned she was generous enough to let me know later, you know, that that felt like a violation, making physical contact with her. We'd never met before without, you know, asking permission or anything. And as soon as she said it, I recognized the truth of it, that, you know, inherent in that moment was the whole history of male violence against women and entitlement to the objectification of women's bodies. And my intention in that moment was less important than the reality of her experience. And it was a wonderful sort of gift to have that reflection externally of, hey, you might want to take a look at this. And so that was a moment of learning. And then the mindfulness practice then becomes, let's pay attention to that sense of entitlement. Let me strive to be aware of who I'm relating to and where they're coming from so that I'm not applying this sense of everyone experiences the world in the same way I do, which is kind of one of the hallmarks of what gets known as privilege, this sort of advantages we have. And so that's just, you know, one example of a kind of somewhat humbling and embarrassing, you know, moment of unconsciousness. So mindfulness enriches our life, and it positions us to see more clearly the habits and the things that we want to change so that we can start relating to them, and we can be aware of them and start relating to them in a different way.
Yes, thank you. I'm speaking with Orne J. Sulfer, and he is the author of Your Heart Was Made for This. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, OrneJSulfer.com. I'm going to spell that for you, Orne, OrneJJay, Sulfer, Sofer, OrneJSulfer.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe program